Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
The power with has more to do with that collaboration, that we both have something that we need to work together on. If we have a shared goal, then we have power with. And then the power within has more about how do I show up in my best self?
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show. You're here for a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders, and in this episode, you're going to get tools to help you on your journey to self-mastery, connection, and creativity in your leadership. Specifically, we're gonna be looking at how to integrate your head, heart, and your gut. We do not wanna ignore the gut. How to unlock your personal power and how to co-create possibilities with your team, your colleagues, and build optimism and hope along the way, and so much more. And here to help us with all that, our guest today is Lisa Danels, the founder and executive director of Human Edge. Lisa's a senior executive talent and leadership consultant and coach who focuses on developing mindful and purpose-driven leaders, unlocking their full leadership potential. And she's the author of a book this year, The Human Edge Advantage, Mastering the Art of Being All In. And Lisa, you're joining us from Basel, Switzerland. So welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, I am glad that we're able to do it. And yeah, we were talking before we started recording about the joys of Switzerland. So I can't complain about my home base, but that's a nice place to call home.
It is.
All right. So Lisa, before we dive into Human Edge and talk more about the book, I want to just get to know you just a little bit better for our listeners by asking you if you could take us back as early as you like to your earliest or one of your earliest memories of yourself as a leader.
Yeah, I think when we talk about leadership, it's really about leading self. That's one of the most important components that we have. And I remember when I was a young child, and I would probably say it had to be around 8 or 9 at this point, because I was going off by myself. And I remember when I had kind of emotional tension in my body, that I would just go for a long walk. And I had this intuitive nature, even back then, to go by water or kind of just be able to process my emotions while I walked. And I always found the more that I did that, the more clarity came. And that was the beginning of that self-awareness journey and understanding what was feeling uncomfortable and how to process those emotions in a way that I could have. Again, the most important thing is we can only move forward in life when we have this clarity. And as an early kid, I was really lucky too with intuition, because a lot of children kind of intuition is built beat out of them. And I was never one of those. Intuition was always something that stayed with me. And I remember this moment in high school where I said something and one of my friends stopped the conversation and said, "You need to listen to her." And I remember it was like, it just solidified my belief in intuition and sticking with it and cultivating it. Because I remember times in my life when I did not listened to my intuition, it was a bit of a disaster.
And the price we pay.
The price we pay. Yes, exactly.
I love that that concept of some of your earliest leadership memories being of leading yourself and processing those things and finding a way through those, and how fortunate you were in that. So often we're not, not everybody's able to do that. And that's a really cool memory.
Yeah. And I think I was really, really fortunate as well. I mean, I always in school, I always gravitated towards the sciences, the hard sciences. That's where I excelled. But for some reason, I took a little bit of, or maybe it was more just extracurricular, but I was in Future Business Leaders of America, and I was a state officer for that club. And I had really an amazing experience between my junior and senior year of high school, because we got to go to 10 days of American management. Like, that was mind-blowing to do that. And I thought, oh, this is so cool, right? And maybe I should have, if I would have listened that earlier, I would have gotten into it. I would have gotten into the leadership space a bit earlier. And I also went through 7 days of leadership training. I mean, so imagine 17 days of having leadership training between your junior and senior year in high school. That's an amazing gift that I got.
Fantastic. Yeah, it truly is. And you get there in the right time, though. We also have to that's part of
that is true. That is true.
Part of the journey. Well, okay. So the book is called The Human Edge Advantage. So set the stage for the book. You argue that the world has changed. The old way of leading, which you describe with an acronym POLICE, it no longer makes sense. So walk us through that acronym, kind of the old style that you're talking about, and then
So let me kind of back up a little bit, because I think what kind of propelled the book, right? And there were a couple of things that really propelled the book. The first one for me was leaders can't know it all anymore. There's too much information coming at us, and we're processing 74 gigabytes of information. It's like 16 films per day. And if leaders think like the old world, when at least when I started working, is leaders did know it all. They had this rich information, they passed off that element. And so that's not realistic anymore. The other thing that started happening is organizations started moving to much more networked organizations, flatter. Organizations need to be more agile. You have these old, even the matrix organization is too slow for today's changes. So this own notion of policing, which has a lot to do with, you know, I tell you what to do, and then I manage your goals. Like, everything is very organized rather than really true empowerment. And that's really one of the big shifts that has to take place, where we have to set the frame as leaders and let our people fill it in, because sometimes they have more expertise than we do. So that's one of the key things that has really changed.
I think that notion that you can't possibly know it all is so important. And even going back to earlier decades, I don't even know if we really knew it all, or if that was an illusion and a way of thinking about things. But because it's impossible. We can't possibly know everything all of our team knows.
We can't. So
we have some technical expertise, and we have our experience, which is valuable, but can't possibly. So that fundamental, you know, and even today, there are so many leaders that wrestle with feeling vulnerable or unequipped or unprepared if they don't know everything, or if they dare ask a question. It's like you're putting unreasonable pressure on yourself if you try to be that way, because it's impossible. You can't possibly know
it. It's impossible. It's really impossible. I mean, I think about it. I mean, you asked about childhood, and one of my favorite gifts from my dad during the holiday season was he got the Encyclopedia Britannica, and they were these beautiful brown books with gold edges, right? And think, like, before the internet, one shelf was our knowledge, unless you went to the library and really had, you know, a go of it. But to think about it, it's like they had these tiny little paragraphs, and you were like, okay, this is my doorway into curiosity and knowledge and learning. And I guess that's something my dad taught me. That was a gift he gave me, because he was an engineer. So he was always kind of tinkering around, and I would always follow him around and check with him. So I think that was a really fun experience about, you know, we at that time, knowledge, we didn't have as much knowledge as we do today. I mean, so much more knowledge is being created. And I think that's the thing that's mind-blowing.
Oh,
So,
it really
getting
is.
back to your question earlier out around the police, it's planning, organizing, leading, implementing, controlling, and evaluating. And that is a very, you know, and it doesn't mean it completely goes away. It doesn't mean those activities don't happen, but it doesn't mean you as a leader have to do that. It means how do you help your people learn how to do that on their own?
And that is a critical distinction. I was just having, by
yeah.
the way, the encyclopedia comment was making me laugh because somehow our family acquired volumes A through J or thereabouts. And that's all the knowledge I had. So I read those religiously over and over again, but that's as far as I could get.
That's so funny.
I can't, it's lost in my mind. I have no idea how we got those, but those are the ones we had. So let's talk about this transition. I was just talking, actually just a week ago, I was talking with someone mm-hmm. about this and he was doing some research and writing on this topic about the need for organizations to be more agile and the frustration that can set in for both teams and leaders alike when we don't do it. And there's a critical piece you just said. It's not that we're doing all of the planning, organizing, leading, implementing, controlling, and evaluating. We're equipping our teams to do that.
Exactly.
That piece is so often ignored by people who, I want to empower, and it's like empowerment run amok, and then they're like, empowerment doesn't work. Well, you didn't do the work to set it up properly. So.
Yeah, and I think there's another factor, which I really talk about in my book, which is around this notion is, you know, the generation X folks, which is us, right? We were the first generation that broke the hierarchical leadership model. Right. And we said, we want to share power. Right. So that was an amazing step for Generation X. This is the gift of leadership we've given to the next generation. But that's only half the formula, because when I coach leaders, what I hear them say is, hey, I do that, but then I don't get anything. I ask them for innovation. And then I say, well, you know, that's only half the equation, because other people have to take the power. And this is that element of we have to empower ourselves. And it's not where someone ordained you. It's where you have to have the personal agency in your life to believe that you can shape your own destiny. And when people can step into that and step into their personal power, then that formula of I'm going to share power and I'm going to take power works together beautifully.
And the other element of this that I think goes into exactly what you're saying, Lisa, is, and this is, he was asking me for my term on this is conditioned indifference. Is some compassion for those folks who may not immediately pick up and say, yes, I'm going, is because there has been a tendency for organizations to condition people to indifference. They tried 10 years ago, 8 years ago. So finally, they're like, you know what? I'm not doing that anymore. It's a waste of energy. I'm just going to keep ahead. I'm going to do my thing. And you may have people like that. But it is possible to help them, and it's going to take time, but it in small ways to find those early wins along the way. If you do have somebody like that, to be aware, I think it's an act of compassion to be aware of whatever that history is.
I absolutely believe. And I think part of it too is as leaders, I mean, I joke around with the leaders I coach because I'm like, you're working too hard, right? And they're like, what do you mean I'm working too hard? I said, you're working too hard. And I said, what do I mean by it? You need to ask more questions. You need to ask more igniting questions, you know, get people's right brain really, you know, popping. I said, because the more you do that and the more possibilities happen, the more you see the energy come up, you see the better engagement. I said, and then as leaders, you don't have to work so hard. And everyone's like, can you tell me more about this?
Well, you know, that's exactly what I was going to say. Tell me more, Lisa, specifically. I'll guide us a little bit, because I always think that there is value in the specificity of the questions we're asking.
Yes.
To really unlock people's creativity, problem solving, and so forth. But when you're encouraging the leaders you're coaching or our listeners right now who are like, okay, Lisa, I hear you. I want to do that. What's the right kind of question to ask? Or what is the range of types of questions we want to be asking?
Yeah. Well, I think there's different types of questions given the situation. So I always like to say we need to first ask clarifying questions, because we really understand, we need to understand what our people have already tried, what they're experimenting with, how they're thinking. So we ask those clarifying questions because we need to be able to understand that. Then we can ask the more what I call empowering questions, which is more about how does somebody see themselves differently or how do they see a situation differently? And one thing I find leaders do is they ask a lot of close-ended questions. They ask questions with did, have, is, can, and it doesn't really bring any new insight. And then when you ask igniting questions, that's more not so much in a one-on-one coaching situation. It's much more related to a group situation. Like, how can we create a car that people can drive in India that only costs $7,000 to produce, right? So all of a sudden the mind goes, well, how can I do that, right? And then you break all the old assumptions that you have about what should a car look like or what should it be, right? And then new possibilities can emerge. And, you know, one of the things that one of the key concepts in the book is around, you know, we have to learn as leaders to set the frame, what's in, what's out. And then we have to let people fill it in. And what does that mean is I used to think it was like we all brought a piece of the puzzle together. But I realized as my own team started playing with it in an innovative space, it's actually not just a piece of the puzzle. It's that we're actually creating new insight by tapping into each other's thoughts. Like I can say something, then you get another thought that builds off that. So it's not just the information I bring or my knowledge, but it's also how do we play together in a new way, which is really that we use the concepts of improv.
And we're going to get to the improv piece. I particularly enjoyed that in the book, partly because our son loves improv. He's studying improv at university. And so some of the perspectives that you brought, I thought were so good there. But what you're talking about there, that network effect of it's 1 + 1 = 5.
Yes.
We're more than the sum of our parts. And to think about leadership in that way, that so much of your job set the parameters, what's you said, what's in, what's out, but and maybe get some of the success criteria out there, but then to ask these igniting questions that activate that network effect and then leverage and support your people in what they're doing. It's such a different way of leading.
It's such a different way. And you work less. And you know, the thing is, and I say to leaders, you know, if you ask the right questions, then you can really be present with what's happening rather than feeling like I need to move it forward. I need to direct, I need to push. Instead, it's just like the magic starts to happen. And then everybody is fully engaged. And that's really why I call why we say the concept in the book is how do you get people all in? And it's all in on many levels. It's the emotional level. It's the physical level. It's the intellectual level, right? You're getting the whole self coming to work, which is what I think is kind of really cool because then people love their job. It's not just a job. It's a time of play.
And if you are wanting to create that type of environment, I hope you're going to stay with us here. You're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Our guest today is Lisa Danels. The Human Edge Advantage is the name of the book. And the subtitle gets to what, Lisa, you were just saying, mastering the art of being all in. And it's funny, that was actually the very next place I was going to go was tell us more about what you mean by all in.
Yeah.
The book is written for leaders. Though what you were just saying is really about helping not just ourselves to be all in, but every one of our team members to be all in. So I wanted to explore that just a little bit farther.
Yeah. So there's three, when I say there's three parts of all in. The first one is this connection to self. I need to be able to really tap into my own power. And that's personal power, right? And we see a lot of people playing in the external world around power, which is this power over, how do I get power? But that's not really true power. True power comes from that connection to self. And that, you know, one of the concepts in the book I talk about is this theory that we're all connected, right? This quantum physics where we are, everything is all connected. And if that's the case, that means you have the ability to tap into anything with your intuition. So that personal power is about really having mastery over yourself. Well, mastery over your mind, mastery over your emotions, right? And that ability of really understanding your own personal agency and that you have the ability to shape and direct your life in the way you want to. And what you think about is what you start to, where you start to gravitate towards.
And this goes back to, we were talking earlier about empowering our teams and being an empowering leader. It starts back to self-leadership, right? It's that I'm empowered.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And in chapter 5, you get into this notion of those three types of power you were just talking about, personal power, And there's the differences, you just rattled them off, but I just want to go a little bit deeper on these.
Yeah.
Power over, power with, and then personal yes. power. So you,
and
you touched
power.
A little bit on personal power. Take us through the others as well.
Yeah. So power over is our traditional model where we believe that we need to dominate somebody else and that power is limited. And there's only a few that hold power. That's the very old fashioned of leadership. I think most people, most companies, or at least in the companies I've worked in, they've moved beyond just the power over. You still see it a lot in politics, though. You see that power over. The power with has more to do with that collaboration, that we both have something that we need to work together on. So you have a, we can, if we have a shared goal, then we have power with. And then the power within has more about how do I show up in my best self so that I can then also do power with better. Because if I show up and my fears and my masks are coming in, then sometimes I'm not going to connect in the right way. And that's the second element of being all in, is about this authentic connection, right? That we really need to connect to others in an authentic way and fully be present with them so we can hear what they have to say and we're really taking it in. And how do we authentically do that in a way of building trust?
And
creating a psychologically safe place for people.
Exactly. So in that notion of personal power and self-mastery that you're touching on, and we want to have the personal power and tap in there so that we're then able to appropriately partner in a power with scenario. I want to get practical on this. Like, and you talk about this in the book, how can we unlock that personal power? If someone's listening right now, they're like, okay, self-mastery. Well, yeah, but I feel tossed about by the tides and the oceans of everything. How do I start to unlock that personal power the way that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pathways you can take. One pathway for me, which is kind of this mental shift, is around accountability, right? So if we really want to have our own personal power, it also means that we're co-creators. We're co-creating with the world around us, which is that personal agency. So that means I have to have this mindset shift where I'm no longer a victim, that every situation in my life, I create both the positive and the negative. And as human beings, we love to embrace the positive. But when it comes to the negative, we're like, oh no, that somebody else created that. So if we really want to embrace our personal power, we have to embrace the fact that we're co-creators and that we're co-creating our environment. And that means we have to take full ownership. Because when we take full ownership that we created something, then it leaves us space to grow and learn.
So on that note, because I know that having read the book, I understand where you're going with that. And I know the objection that sometimes comes up when I'm having this conversation with leaders is that there are indeed structural issues in our world that we didn't create. We still have power over our response, but I may not have created the institutional racism that existed, or I may not have, created the misogyny or whatever it is that we're dealing with. So where does that ownership come in exactly?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the ownership is how you look at the problem, right? So are you going to sit and complain about it? Or are you going to take a step back and say, how can I influence it? Or how can I show up in my way so that I can role model something else, right? That's one aspect. The other part of the personal power is how you master your mind. Most people are not masters of their mind. They don't know what their thoughts are. They don't know what they're thinking. So they don't realize, like, how can I use my mind? And I'm not going to go into the functions of the mind because it's too detailed for the podcast. But how can we really get mental mastery and let our mind work for us? I use the example of the mind as like the guide dog with a blind man. Right? That the blind man, the dog's not in charge. The man is deciding where he wants to go and how he wants to experience life. So our mind is like the guide dog. It can help us immensely, but we have to have control over it. And we're not disciplined, especially people are checking their mail. They're bouncing all over. I mean, we have an assessment tool and we're shocked how low mental mastery is.
And has declined, I think, because of the systems that we have created around ourselves.
Absolutely. And the, you know, our Instagram, the dopamine hits that we're trying, that we're always trying to get. I mean, the social media companies know exactly how to distract us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then the
yeah.
and the third aspect is, right, this third aspect is really about managing your emotions. How do you really master your emotions so that you're able to, first of all, be able to express them, know what you feel, be able to tap in what other people feel, know your needs, be able to express them? Because if we can't do that, how in the world are we going to connect authentically to people?
I think that is so important when we're talking about human-centered leadership. And there is a business results element to this. So for our like numbers folks, the business results are there, but this element of emotion, I think, is so critical because so often, and I talk to many leaders who want, with great intent, great intentions, to be present and aware and supportive and whatever challenges people are going through. And yet, as you were just saying, there is a discomfort with emotion for many leaders. And to get comfortable with our own emotions first, the whole range of them, know how to process them, what to do with them, and then to be able to show up in a really centered way for our colleagues, the people we're serving, our teams, and the people we're supporting. Like, I wanted to emphasize that because I think it's easy to overlook that.
Overlook it. One of the things I really liked that you said, David, was around the range of emotion, right? Because we have, if we have childhood patterns where we didn't get the emotional nourishment we were looking for, then we made a decision to narrow our emotional band. So you have to be able to feel shame at the lowest level, and you have to be able to feel bliss. And there's like 100 other emotions in between those two, you know? So they, I don't know if you've come across the Atlas Project by the Dalai Lama. Have you seen that?
Yeah, through
yeah, so that's a great, I mean, for people who are looking to understand the emotional range, that is a great tool. It's a free tool online, and I highly recommend that one, because one of the things, I don't know if you experience this when you're working with leaders, is when I always do, especially when I'm working with teams, I'll do an emotional check-in, because when teams connect with each other in the beginning of a team event, the whole team event is different. And what surprises me is when you ask, how do you feel? People don't use emotional words. So then I started putting emoticons on the, like on my slide, because I wanted people to be able to find an emotion, because it doesn't come naturally to people.
Exactly. It is fun. I have experienced that too. How are you feeling? Well, I'm doing this. Well, that's nice, but how are you feeling?
Right.
You know, and tapping into that, going, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I think there's like, you know, one tool I would say to leaders is like, you know, that question of how are you? Right. So there's this, how are you? Right. Which is kind of, it could be, it's more superficial, right? It's more of a nicety, social, or you can really look at someone and go, how are you? Right. And hold the eye contact and really lower the tone and soften the tone. And then somebody really is saying, wait, this person really wants to know how I'm feeling today.
I had a peer earlier in my career, his way of doing that was, how are you doing? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was his way of saying, I'm not just doing a nicety.
No.
I genuinely want to know and make that connection.
Yeah. If you really make the eye contact with someone and be fully present with them, the other person gets the social cues.
And those work online with video as well as in person.
Absolutely.
All right, you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. Our guest today is Lisa Donnells, The Human Edge Advantage, Mastering the Art of Being All In. And Lisa, there are some shifts that you talk about in the book, from taking to giving, from selecting to creating, and acknowledgement to self-esteem. And I was wondering if you might, from taking to giving, I think we can kind of, most of us are going to have some experience with some of these changes that happen when we really can activate that and act that way. When you talk about shifting from selecting to creating, I thought this was a fascinating one. I wonder if you wouldn't unpack that.
Yeah. So it's one of my pet peeves actually in life when I'm coaching people, right? And you ask them what they want, right? They always look in the external world and then they start selecting from what's available, right? So whether it's the job, it's the house, it's the, right? They only look into the physical world of what's there. And one of the things I say is, I say, wait, if we go back to that moment of we're creative beings, then what I want you to do is I want you to think in a different way and say, what would you like to create? Right? Because you can create anything that you want. So this is a big shift because you move into a whole new place of possibilities. Because some people will say, oh, well, I want this job, but it's not available. And I'll be like, well, create it. Yeah. And when you put that, when you kind of put that wish out, then all of a sudden people start showing up around you.
It is amazing.
So that's really what I meant by that shift. And it's a big shift.
It really is. It's a huge shift. And it is fascinating. I have found different times in my life, like, you know, that old cliche that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. But there really is a truth to that. And it's sometimes that they were there the whole time, but it wasn't until you were ready with the creation of what you were after and what you were thinking about that you even saw them for what they, you know, who they are.
Well, I truly believe, like, my experience in life around this co-creation process is there's two functions in it. The first function is the mental function, right? Which is I kind of think of it, you know, when you're a kid, when you do the paper mache, right? And the first thing you did was you decided what you wanted to create. So you created the wire frame with the chicken wire, right? So that's the thinking part for me in terms of the creation process. And that's great. And the thinking process kind of forms your idea, but there's something even more powerful, which is the second stage, which is the emotional, which is how will I feel when I get this? And when we tap into the emotional aspect, which is much stronger, it magnetizes what we want in our life much faster. So what would it feel like to get that promotion? How would I feel like when I found the perfect relationship, right? What would it feel like when my team are all acting in an empowered way?
And if we really exercise that imagination or even explore as best we can what that might feel like, sometimes it can also be a disqualifier, an eliminator, and help us go, oh, I thought that's what I wanted, but no, when I really think about how I feel, I'm not going to feel any different. That's not actually what I want at all.
And that No, you bring up a really good point, because a lot of times when I get leaders that I'm coaching, they'll ask me about, like, oh, this person just wants a promotion. They just keep coming to me asking. And I said, ask them the question, what do they hope by getting the promotion? And then all of a sudden you uncover what they really want. Maybe it's not the promotion. Maybe it's recognition. Maybe it's the raise. Maybe, you know, you don't know until you ask that question. And it's the same thing with us. We have to ask ourselves, what do we hope to gain by getting it?
Yeah. One of my favorite versions of this question is, what will a successful outcome do for you?
Yeah, it's a great question.
You know, getting underneath what is really to help us unpack all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there is so much in this book. We're just scratching the surface, and I promise we're going to get to some of the improv stuff, or we're going to go there in the co-creation in just a moment. But Lisa, tell our listeners, they want to learn more. You mentioned an assessment. Where do we go to connect, learn more, find the book, and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two places you can go. One place you can go is my first name, last name, Lisa Daniels, Daniels, .com. And then there you can go to my company's name, which is human-edge.com, and you'll find all of our tools. We have a great tool for connect cards, which allow to build trust very quickly. You know, we have my book, we have other learning elements. So and of course we have our assessments. And there's actually an assessment tool called Core Fusion, which is attached to the book.
Excellent. Tons of resources to help you on your journey here. So in the
absolutely
part four of the Human Edge Advantage, you get into co-creating possibilities, which we've mentioned in a number of different ways. And part of this process is getting people to truly care, cultivating optimism and hope, like paired with reality. I love these phrases you got in the book, generating and catching insight. So setting the table for collecting insight, which I just thought was such a neat way of thinking about it. So, walk us through some of this process. And obviously we can't do the whole thing in the time we have, but I'd love to just go a little bit deeper, and then we're going to get into that improv metaphor that you were bringing up earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the first thing that we need to do is we need to create the frame, because that's one of the key things. And what does that mean? It really means saying what's in, what's out, right? Where do we want people to play? Because a lot of the times people will innovate and then you go, well, that's not what I wanted. right? So we need to set, we need
Everybody
to kind
gets
of,
frustrated.
yeah, they get frustrated. So we need to really create the frame. And in the book, I give the 7 steps for creating the frame. And so I would highly recommend that, because that's something that leaders, when they get it, it makes their life much easier. The other thing is, when it comes to, you mentioned this notion of hope, right? And optimism, right? So that was actually one of the most enlightening chapters for me. That one and trust were the two that I found I learned the most as the writer and investigator. And when it comes to hope, one of the things I realized is it's actually a process. And this one was really interesting for me, because when it comes to hope, it means that as leaders, we have to help people understand where they want to go, and then help them understand what could get in their way. And by helping them get in the what by identifying what could go, get in their way, we actually unlock their potential. It sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but it actually really works. So that was interesting for me, because we think of hope as like, it's like the Hail Mary. But that's actually, no, when we're talking about it in business, it's actually a process that we can take people through, which will then allow them to step into their stretch zone in a safer way, and be able for them to grow. So, and then the other aspect is about the setting the table is, there's a big element around, we need to, what I call, create the collect the get the collective genius from each person. And we do that by having some fun and playing. Meaning, a lot of the times we're not very good, and I work with a lot of senior teams, that they don't know how to frame problems. So when it comes to the co-creation, we need to frame the problem really well. Like when I started on the ideas for the book, I said to my team when we were working on it, we're like, okay, what are the problems we're trying to solve? And that was kind of where I started in our conversation today. So we have to frame the problem. And then one of the things we really need to do is we need to turn the problem upside down, and we need to say, what are all our assumptions about the problem? Because we can't a lot of the times come up with new ideas, because we hold true to those assumptions that may not be true.
Like you were saying,
So,
a car
and then
has
we
to
could do
be.
fun activities like, you know, write the answer that you think is most crazy that if someone would fire you for, and then you kind of take the key elements of that, and you allow each person to bring their key elements without any one voice dominating. And this is where you can, this is where you can really have some fun.
So, and so many really practical, powerful steps in this aspect of framing the things as you're talking about. And the questioning of our assumptions is so powerful, and you've got some ways to do that. And the but going back to the metaphor you were talking about earlier, or the analogy of, you know, saying, hey, well, how could we build a car that's only $7,000 that can be produced in India? To question our assumptions of what a car is and what goes into it and how it works and all the rest of it, there's so much power in that if we can help to get there. And sometimes that can be frustrating for team members. So to create some of these fun ways to do it, like you're saying, can be really powerful.
The other thing I learned, and I don't know if I learned it from my dad or I learned it from my intuition. I don't know, because my dad, I picked up a lot of how my dad solved problems being an engineer. Because, you know, when you're an engineer at that level, he was, you know, he had the grace to help put a man on the moon. So he worked on the Apollo mission. So he was very intuitive, and I picked up a lot from him. But one of the things he really taught me how to do is to walk around a problem. And I know that sounds really crazy, but the way I think about it in my mind is, I think about it as like a big golf ball in the middle of the room, and the problem has a lot of facets, right? So I walk around the problem, and I try to see the problem from a lot of different angles. And then that allows me to think in a much more complex and systemic way, so I can solve the problem in a way that really brings a solution that hasn't been thought of before.
And part of what you're, if we put all this together, you don't have to figure out every facet of the problem yourself. You have a
No.
team, and that's why you're asking some of their experience, some of their perspective. They're going to see some of those facets. So you can
Yeah.
construct that full picture by engaging with your team in a way that you couldn't do just yourself.
Yeah. And let me add something, because I think that is really important, is that once as a leader you frame the problem, right? And the team is very clear on where the playground is, you get to actually be a team member and have fun with them. You don't have to guide the process like you used to and kind of not be able to participate. And I think that's also another element that you get to bring your own creativity. And that concept I talk about in the book about improv is don't bring the cathedral, bring a brick. Is if I come, a lot of the times we come into these meetings with decisions that are already like, the problem is already framed. The solution is already framed. And then if you think about it, well, if I bring the cathedral, then you as the listener, what can you change? You can change maybe the window color, the door, right? The frame, it's too structured already. So instead, if we really want to get the best from our leadership teams, we need to come in with the frame and let people then bring their brick so that we're building something together. And we might have thought we were building a cathedral, but in the end, we might build something like a Geary building that is world famous. We don't know. That's the beauty of the process.
Bring a brick, not a cathedral. I love the idea there. And so going back to improv, like you were saying, for folks who might not be familiar with it, you watch improv and they do this entire funny scene story. It's great. No one person came up with that. It was each person moment by moment contributing their brick that built the cathedral of the scene.
That's right. And the key element of it is being present, right? Because improv only works when we're emotionally present, we're mentally present, right? And we're physically present with other people. And it's so easy. I mean, how many times do you see in meetings where you have three people trying to solve a problem and the rest of the group starts to move away? Right. It takes a lot of attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Love this conversation. There are so many more directions we could go. Lisa, I really appreciate your time here. This has been really powerful. And as we think about all the different ways of co-creating, I'm also struck by one commonality. So your father was an Apollo engineer. So my grandfather was a metallurgist in the Apollo work. So small world.
Oh, that is funny.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
And when my dad passed away and we were looking through everything, I have the pin that they were given to wear on their lapel when the Apollo mission happened.
That's fantastic. I don't have them anymore. I lost them, but I had a sheet of stickers from the various missions
that's nice.
I had them for years and years and they got in a flood or something, but that was very cool.
Oh.
All right. Well, Lisa Danels, The Human Edge Advantage, Mastering the Art of Being All In. It has been just a pleasure talking with you about all of these different aspects of truly human-centered leadership. I want to give you a final thought before we close. So if someone is listening to all of this and going, okay, so many good concepts, what's the practical next step I should take to really go down this, travel this
path? Yeah, I think the most important one is the element, I would say two aspects. One is really build your self-awareness. Because self-awareness is the key to being an amazing leader and also unlocking your own potential. And the second thing I would say is stay curious, right? Like this curiosity is such an important element to see life in a new way and learn how to reframe things. You know, instead of saying, oh my God, I'm not happy with this, say, well, what's a new possibility that can emerge from something, even if it's not my first choice? So I think that will bring a whole new level of thinking and emotion, and then you don't know what's going to happen.
I can fully say from my personal practice of that discipline over the last several years, it absolutely will. Thank you so much. So listeners,
my pleasure.
It's been our pleasure listening and learning from you. If you've enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of these practical communication skills to help you accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. And I really want to thank our guest today, Lisa Danels. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you being
with
us today. And also want to thank our producer and sound engineer, Brooke Bradford over at Sheep in Space Digital Business Services. Listener, you've got so many different practical things you can do. And we start by cultivating that self-awareness. And we've talked about managing our emotions. We talked about asking those activating questions, igniting questions, just so many different ways to get into those framing, how we're framing our problems and the act of co-creation. I hope that you will choose one of those, get started, and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.